This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, search for meaning in a bowl of alphabeti. Let's warm up for today's show with a little word history. Today, we are talking about junk. Not the rather vulgar slang for genitals, but in the sense of rubbish. This arose from the 14th century meaning of junk, which was the nautical term for rope. And it evolved to mean the crap left behind by ships, and from that, to mean any old crap at all. On with the show. Tomb ends in one century, livid gloss puzzles. 7:10. That's your clue for what this episode's about. As I'm sure you deduced, cryptic crosswords. Or, as I like to call them, infuriating word puzzles that I can't do. On a good day, I can get maybe 4 clues? I think I'm thwarted pretty quickly by my ineptitude at divorcing a word from its meaning in that context, which, if you've been listening to The Allusionist since the beginning, you'll remember was one of the reasons I am averse to puns. So, I'll blame my shoddy cryptic crossword ability on my suspicion that the clues are puns.
Pun does not always work when you write it down, because people have different ways of pronouncing different words. Clues can be analogous to pun. I think clues are more like jokes. And that's kind of what I keep falling back on, is if you can tell jokes, and if you can understand jokes when other people tell them, I think you're probably most of the way there to being able to do cryptic crosswords.
I am capable of identifying jokes. Perhaps there is hope for me with cryptic crosswords then.
My name is John Featenby, and I compile crosswords for a living. I do the two cryptic crosswords. I do the big general knowledge crossword, and I do assorted other bits and bobs for the newspaper that I work for. When I announce that I make crosswords, I mean, the first thing is, I can't do those. That would be impossible. The second response I get is, you're the devious so-and-so who ruins my Sunday morning every week. Sorry.
Cryptic crosswords have been ruining Sunday mornings since the 30th of July 1925, the publication date of what is considered to be the first true cryptic crossword in the Sunday Express newspaper in Britain. Straightforward crosswords had been around for considerably longer, but the first official crossword appeared in December 1913, when Arthur Wynne, a former onion farmer who was, by then, the editor of the New York World newspaper, decided to fill some space on a page with what was then called a word cross. That's how crosswords started, but how does John Featenby start a crossword?
The way I do it is starting with the grid, and to keep things easy for their graphics department, I work from a finite number of grids that I know I can fit words into fairly easily.
How many grids?
With the cryptic ones, I've got 31 different ones. Oof. So this is just to keep it varied. It's like whatever the day of the month is that the puzzle will be published on. I use the grid for that, pretty confident in the knowledge that I haven't used it recently.
For the average British cryptic crossword, the grid is 12 to 15 squares square and has a rotationally symmetrical word layout.
Which more normally comes first, the word or the idea for the clue?
I don't see how you could do it other than starting with the word.
Uh-huh.
I think that's the bedrock. That's what the solver will be working towards, so that's what you're working from. So, you know, you start with your grid full of words and no clues at all. I'm not sure how you could work doing it the other way around. You know, having a brilliant idea for a word, you'd then have to find a place for it in a grid, which is unlikely to happen over and over. Whereas if you go the other way around, you know, you're starting with your words. And absolutely, totally egalitarian as far as words are concerned. I think you can write an interesting clue for any word, and any word will lend itself to an interesting definition. And then you just furrow your brow until brilliant cryptic clues fall out of your fingers.
Yeah, those brilliant cryptic clues that, to the uninitiated, look like lines that David Lynch cut from a script for being too confusing. Show me the way, John.
I don't think there is a rigid set of rules where you can say, well, this is fair and that's not fair, and this is what you do and this is what you don't do. Because as long as the person who is solving the crossword has got the word from the clue you have given them, then that's an all right clue. When you first look at it, it should look like a sentence that reads off the page, but you know out of that sentence there is going to be a word, and you know how many letters long it is, and that helps. And then you just have to start breaking the clue down and seeing, you know, what kind of thing it's it's trying to tell you. Because if you can't get it, it's pointless. So, you know, it has to be apprehendable at some level. Squashing words into grids, it's sort of a little bit routine. As you do it, you're kind of looking at the words that are going in and thinking, well, there's something I might do with that, and there's something I might do with that. There are things I fall back on, and I think I have shortcuts that I use. The letter S can be second or sun or something like that. T can be time. My root one is anagrams. You know, if I get stuck on compiling a cryptic clue, then I start poking around with the letters and seeing if they anagrammatize into something appealing. And it's not particularly elegant, but there's a crossword I was compiling not long ago, and I had the phrase in loco parentis. And I said, oh, wow, man, you know, how do you start cluing that? And I had this train fixation going on. I wanted to do something about trains because it's got loco in the middle. And it didn't work. And it was the last one, and I clued everything else. And I was just like, it's going to have to be an anagram. But it turns out in loco parentis is an anagram of oral inspection. And it just, to me, it doesn't look like it should be. Lovely. You just go, oh, you know, oral inspection ordered for one acting as mum or dad. Oral inspection, that's all the letters you need. Ordered is the indication that you're going to have to jumble those up somehow, and then there's the definition tacked on the end. And that's a really kind of bread and butter clue. But you need stuff like that. There has to be a little toehold so that you can get started.
Here's the typical formula of a cryptic crossword clue. At the beginning or the end of the clue is the meaning of the answer you're looking for, while the rest of the clue indicates how you're supposed to get there. It might contain a code word to hint to the solver what is going on, for example, endless or beheaded to mean you have to remove a letter from the end of a word, or confused, wild, or drunk to show you're looking for an anagram. As well as taking liberties with our normal vocabulary, crossword clues have a vocabulary of their own.
That's not set in stone. That's the thing that will change with time, you know, as language kind of moves on. And I persistently use M, the word E-M, and the word N-E-N, to mean space. And people kind of understand that, but I don't know if they understand why they know it. I guess it's archaic in these days of not having hot metal presses. They're printers' measures for spaces. So an N was a single character space and an M was a double character space. Now, I just use that quite blithely. Nobody ever rings up or emails to say, what on earth do you mean by that? But I don't know quite that that's a standards formation that's going to last that much longer.
If you don't speak fluent crossword and know every possible meaning of every word ever, there are manuals and dictionaries and websites that will help you decode what's going on in the clues. John, any other advice for the crossword novice?
Any advice I have to give would not be much more complicated than keep going, keep trying. Have a look at the short words, see if anything leaps out. Getting the first clue in gives you an awful lot of ingress into the remaining clues. It gets easier as you carry on through it, because you get more and more letters, but you never reach that point of triviality that you do with Sudokus. They're really interesting when you start them, but as you go through the puzzle, it becomes progressively less and less challenging, to the point at which the last square can only be one thing. And you don't get that in crosswords. You can be stuck on like the last crossword clue for quite a long time. With the cryptic crosswords I do, one of them is two sets of clues for the same grid. So for the same answers, there's a set of cryptic clues and a set of straightforward clues. And that's a great way of learning, because if you cannot do the cryptic clue, have a look at the quick clue. Might give you an idea what the word is, and you can then sort of try and reverse engineer the clue to see how it came out.
So you've got like a cheat right there, but it's legitimate.
Right in front of you. I have one rather brilliant reader who's got a little bit shirty about the fact that the straightforward clues were too visible. He said they were putting off because he tries to do it just using the cryptic clues, but he can sort of see the straightforward clues out of the corner of his eye. So he has to mask them off with masking tape before he even starts.
That's a brilliantly low-tech solution to a problem, but technology is intruding on the crossword.
Say 10 or 15 years ago, that general knowledge crossword, I would have to make that a lot more accessible than it is now. Whatever I write, people can Google it, and they do. And there are crossword forums where people trade answers and comments and stuff. So at that point, how do you make general knowledge crossword interesting? And the only way you make it interesting is by putting interesting things into it. So that's where I come from with that at the moment. The general knowledge crossword that I do every week has a prize attached to it, quite a big prize. So I do make the crossword quite challenging, but it is all ultimately Googleable.
That's a hollow victory, though. Technology is changing crosswords in all sorts of ways for the setters.
You know, I've been dabbling in compiling crosswords and getting them published and stuff since the 1980s. And when I started, my first job was for a trade journal called Computer Talk, which doesn't exist anymore. And you think, well, okay, Computer Talk, that sounds like a very high-tech thing. But the way I was making a crossword for them was by drawing a grid on a piece of paper with a ruler and a pencil and then filling the words in manually, because there weren't, at that point, such things as easily accessible databases of words or computer algorithms to squeeze them into grids. You kind of did it by trial and error. And one brilliant book, Crossword Dictionary, I think, and it had no definitions, but it had all the words from that dictionary listed by length of word and then alphabetically by alternate letter. So you start the first half of the book started with four letter words that were A something, and then A something, B something, until you got to the 26 letter words that were Z something, Z something, Z, which there aren't terribly many of. And then the second half of the book was exactly the same, but rearranged by the even numbered letters rather than the odd numbered ones. So, you know, it used to be like a proper physical task. And now the process of actually filling a grid is pretty straightforward. As a result of that, you now have, I suspect, companies who have large databases of grids, large databases of words, and large databases of clues. And it is pretty much just pressing F1 on a keyboard, and there's your crossword. I mean, and I'm just like some little guy with a loom sitting next to a clothes factory, you know, sort of hand-stitching mine together and going, well, I hope mine have some, like, a degree of idiosyncrasy, or they can be lighter on their feet, maybe, than the huge industrially produced ones. But that doesn't alter the fact that it is quite easy just to buy things off the peg now.
Perhaps to prove that you can't replace him with a machine just yet, John then set himself a challenge.
I very, very foolishly said something like, oh yeah, you know, you write a clue for any word, just in this doddle.
The self-inflicted test to write a cryptic clue for my surname, Zaltzman.
I haven't entirely finessed it yet, but I could see where I was going with it, right? I spent ages with those Zs. Jacuzzi. I was once in the position of having to write a cryptic clue for jacuzzi and just about kind of scrapped the grid and started again. Z is a difficult one. And this is where bespoke crossword compiling will stand you in good stead, because you can move with the times. I am aware of a band called ZZ Top, and I am confident enough that ZZ Top are part of the cultural subconscious that I could use them in a clue. So I reckon you could use the phrase top band to indicate ZZ, right?
Yeah.
ZZ. So then you've just got an ALT in the middle of it. And ALT is brilliant because there's all sorts of things you can use as synonyms for that. It could be a lieutenant, which is not very useful here, but it is short for alternate and alternative.
Mm.
So you've got your ZZ taken care of, you've got your alt taken care of, and then man is just a doddle. So, I mean, it's not the most brilliant clue I've ever written, but I thought top band, including alternative chap, comma, a podcaster.
Incredible. This is like the proudest moment of my professional life.
That's made my heart lift. That's brilliant. I very rarely sort of sit back from the screen and go, crikey, that was good. But I did once. It's 100, 100, minus 1, equals 99.
Oh, no.
And it's four letters.
Cone?
Brilliant!
You've encouraged me.
Do you see where it comes from? The C is Roman numerals for 100.
I didn't even think of that. I'm a fool.
And then 1 is just O-N-E written out, and then a 99 is a cone, an ice cream.
It was because it was four letters that made it easier than if it was going to be longer.
Yeah. As I earnestly beseech people starting crosswords, to begin with, use the small words, the little ones.
That is the quickest I've ever got a clue.
It's a miracle. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is waterbrush, noun. A sudden flow of saliva associated with indigestion. One of you asked if I could spell out the randomly selected words of the day. Even better, there is a picture of the relevant dictionary entry on the post about each episode at theallusionist.org, as well as links to various interesting bits and bobs about the subject of the episode, and a bunch of other stuff. Take a look, theallusionist.org. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman. The music is by Martin Austwick. John Featenby's crosswords appear every Sunday in one of Britain's biggest newspapers. And one final clue. The Den is in disarray, becoming terminal. 3-3. The End.